Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, a long and distinguished career in show business for my first guest this morning goes right back to his early days as a cameraman in RTE. But it was just the starting point for an incredibly successful career that truly defies definition. He's a presenter, a writer of musicals, a documentary maker, a songwriter, and of course he won the Eurovision with Johnny Logan for What's Another Year. And I'm delighted to say that ahead of a special show called In My Life, a celebration of Shay Healy, which is next on Sunday, the 3rd of November in the Gaiety Theatre. I'll give all the details in a moment. I'm sitting opposite Shay Healy. Good morning, Shay Healy.
Good morning.
Delighted you're here. And beside you, John McColgan, who's obviously producing the show and your best friends forever. And Lisa Lam, who'll be singing in that wonderful show, along with the likes of Niamh Kavanagh, Johnny Logan, Finbar Fury. And you're going to sing us first thing this morning, Lisa. You're going to sing a song written by Shay called In My Life, which is, of course, the name of the show. So take it away, Lisa.
Thank you. Life is a beautiful, wonderful miracle. From the moment we're born, each life is unique and nobody knows where it might lead. We each have a soul and we each have a destiny that we're bound to fulfill. And these are the things I am hoping will happen to me. I want to spread my wings. I want to touch the sky. I want to walk in sunshine. I want to laugh and cry, and I want to race the wind till my senses are all alive. I want to fall in love with someone. That's what I want in my life.
That was so beautiful, Lisa Lam. What a beautiful voice you have. Accompanied there by John McLaughlin on guitar and Derek Kremen on keyboard. And of course, it's In My Life, a song written by Shay Healy, who was sitting watching you there as you sung it so beautifully. You're going to come back later on, Lisa, and sing for us as well. And of course, Shay and John, this show, all the proceeds are going to Parkinson's Ireland. Because of course, Shay, as many people know, you've been living with Parkinson's since 2004. But I'm looking at you now, and you look great, Shay Healy, and you're doing good.
Thanks. very much. I feel sometimes like a fox is chased through a hedge by a pack of hounds. my face has got longer. There's that old joke, the guy walks into the bar with the horse and the barman says, "Why the long face?" I have a long face and I've got a Mayo nose now.
No, you look great. And tell me about this show, John. I mean, first of all, John McCaughan, you're producing this special tribute show next Sunday night, all proceeds going to Parkinson's for Shay Healy. But you two know each other forever. Take me back to when you first met.
I will indeed. We were in RTE together as cameramen, and I went on my very first holiday to Salt Hill with Shay Healy.
How long ago are we talking, roughly?
We're talking about 1965, maybe.
Yeah. And this irresponsible young man that I was introducing to the adult world, he puked in the sink. and locked up the plumbing in the house for the whole week.
I wasn't used to drinking, and I went out, and I think I had a huge amount of alcohol, like 3 pints. And on the way home, we got feed of fish and chips, and we were in this little... in this little bed set, and...
Hello, Gemma, hello, Sean. They still remember as well.
I threw up into the sink, and I was in McCartan's pharmacy in Sutton about 3 months ago, and this woman came up to me, and she said, "Do you remember throwing up in my sink?" So she now lives in Dublin, and she remembers us for that very famous incident. But we had so many adventures together. I had one other thing. Shay and I were trundling down on my Honda 50 past Donnybrook Church, and the front wheel mudguard went into the wheel, and Shay flew over my head onto the road. I thought he might have been dead, but he wasn't. He was bruised, and he was all shook up. But that was another. But so we've had many adventures, and over the years, Shay's house was a fantastic place for parties, and Dimna, his wife and Shay were fantastic hosts, and everybody you could think of and mention came to those celebrated parties over the years.
And what's lovely about this tribute night next Sunday night, which you're producing, John, and obviously for people who listening who might not know, of course, you're behind Riverdance, etc. But what can people expect from next Sunday night?
I think I'm trying to create something that's more than a concert. It's a celebration of a life, and everybody who's on the show is a dear friend of Shay's and worked with them. So we're constructing the show so that all of the guests who come on interact and talk to Shay about their memories and the work they've done together. And then they sing one of their own songs and they sing one of Shay's songs. We have a fantastic band on stage led by Jimmy Smith and wonderful artist. Johnny Logan is flying in, especially for the night. Wouldn't miss it for anything. And Angus McAnally and Shay used to tour a show called The Two Egypts. So Angus is helping.
Angus is there. If my voice... which ties up sometimes because of the Parkinson. I have Angus beside me on it. And we set off on the Two Regis tour, and we did 3 dates. We did Limerick in the heat wave, and we did Scariff, and we did the Hawkswell in Sligo. And Angus tells a story about after the Limerick gig, I rang home, and he overheard me saying to him, £17. No, between us. And we got to Sligo, and the way the show was that two of us would go on for 15 minutes, and then I'd go off and leave Angus to show off for 15 minutes. And when Angus was coming off after he'd done this since, a flashlight started on his toes and came up along his body and blinded him in his eyes. And Angus says, "What's going on?" And the voice was the guard, and he said, "Two fellas escaped from Roscommon jail today, and we're wondering, were you one of them?"
But you're still writing songs, Shay Healy, and we're going to have a listen now. There's a new song you've written called Donnybrook Fair, and it was recorded by Nathan Carter. It features Finbar Fury. Let's just have a little flavour of how successful you still are, Shay Healy.
From the moment I saw her, I was trapped by her snare. Oh, how young and so beautiful was the lass at the Donnybrook Fair.
white as snow, and her tawny red hair. Such a vision did I ever see, was last at the Donnybrook Fair. In my life,
you still are as busy as ever. You haven't let your illness, obviously you've Parkinson's since 2004, which is quite a long time, but it doesn't define you, sure it doesn't, Shay?
No, I tried not to let it. That's the struggle, really, to live past it and to try not to be seen as a cripple and not to feel that people are patronising you unconsciously and sympathising with you. I mean, self-pity is the enemy for almost everybody anyway. And especially as you get older, you have more time to reflect on stuff. And it's a terrible thing to say, but the worst thing to be is around a lot of old people, because everybody's dealing with it and it's a crisis for everybody. And consequently, they're not as outgoing as they would have been in their youth. And you can sit at a table with six people and no conversation is volunteered. You have to work at everything. So I try to stay in touch and try to go to gigs, and but I have to have my care now, because large crowds defeat me. That's why I cut off my Carnegie Hall concert.
But look, just for my listeners, you've got this really cool T-shirt on, like, once a rocker, once a radical. You remain true to yourself, don't you?
Yeah. I suppose it's quite an unorthodox life, but they used to call me a jack of all trades, and I finally got wise one time and I said, it's really an edict. From now on, I want to be known as a multimedia artist.
But you are. John McColgan, I mean, most people either can be a songwriter or be a presenter, but what you're celebrating next Sunday night in the Gaiety, he is many things.
He's a diversity, and I've been involved with him some. I have to say, I love him to death, and he's a great friend, and he's fantastic company, and he's very funny, and he's very witty. He said of himself there recently, we were meeting and talking about this show, he said, you know, I'm a sniper's nightmare.
Because you move so much. Yeah.
But he wrote The Wiremen, which I produced, and Lisa Lamb sang the song In My Life from that show, which was a terrific show. He's written four books, and he's in the middle of writing another book. And his own autobiography book is fantastic if you get to read it. Mm-hmm. So he's in every morning, he gets up, he goes to the piano, he writes songs, he writes books. I mean, he never, never stops, and there's no self-pity. He continues to work really, really hard.
And I must say that Bill Shanley was the co-writer on Donnybrook Fair.
Bill,
great guitar player.
It's lovely also that you can still play the piano, isn't it, Shay?
Well, I just about, my hands are the worst thing that's affected with the Parkinson's now. I've almost lost the use of my fingers. They're kind of dead. The tips of them are dead. And typing is a nightmare. And trying to make it send a text from a street corner is just, it's gone out the window. So I have to work at the piano, but I love it. When I get a blockage or feeling crap, I just swing around and the piano's there and just thump away for a while.
And just lots of lovely reaction. Just going to bring two to you, Shay. Teresa and Slag says, Miriam, I sincerely hope RT record the show in the Gaiety next week for Shay, so that those of us who can't get to it can see it at some stage on TV. Sounds like it will be absolutely fantastic. Another says, it's so lovely to hear Shay on your programme this morning, Miriam. He's a living legend. He's brought us some incredible television and musical moments, like the Eurovision, also that famous Nighthawk Doherty interview, and the beautiful Stardust performance. He's a true gent. That's from Hugh Galanders. So, finally, tell people about this concert. If they want to go, how can they go, John?
They can buy a ticket to the Gaiety Theatre on November the 3rd. The show starts at 8 o'clock. And it's going to be a very special night, and tickets are selling fast. They're more than half sold out. So get on the blower and get the tickets. And we have a amazing guests, and it's I'm looking forward to it myself. And then Don Meskell and Angus and Finbar Fury, and there's a wonderful girl called Donna Taggart. Mm-hmm. I think she was on your show.
Yeah, she's super.
And she had an amazing hit called "Jealous of the Angels." She has an incredible voice, and she's there, and she's going to sing one of Shay's songs, a country duet called "Keep It Country" with Don Meskell. I think, is that right, Shay?
It's half right, John.
Half right. Okay.
Maybe it's these I love them. Still.
Rochelle is still in charge of the show, and I dip in and out. And Julian Erskine, who's out there, is fantastic. So he helps put everything together. And all of our old Riverdance pals help too. They all volunteer to make the show. So the money goes to Parkinson's. All the main artists are not being paid. They're very kindly volunteering their time. But a very special night. A night to remember, and for all of us who love Shay and admire all these artists, it'll be very special.
I just want to say that it's a celebration. It's not a tribute show, really. For me, it's a celebration of the joy that I've come into my life through the various musicians and artists and singers and jongleurs and whatever. And I've never been happier than around people who come from these disciplines.
And I know, as everyone will be saying, the joy you've brought to their lives too, Shahid. I just bring you two more comments. Miriam, Shay is a Renaissance man. And another says, great to hear Shahid sounding so well. Sláinte a Croí, that's from Bernard. Listen, John McCaug and Shahid, thank you both so much for coming in this morning. Well, actors and comedians Sue Collins and Sinead Colbert identified a gap in the comedy market when they came together to form Dirt Birds. Their sketches reflect the lived experience for Irish women from right around this country. And they focus on everything from the trials of getting the homework done to competitive parenting. And the sketches have found a huge audience on social media, and Sue and Sinead have been touring the country with their live show, and now they have a new self-help book out. And Sue Collins and Sinead Colbert join me here in studio. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Miriam.
Listen, before
how are
we
you?
Start, we're just going to begin with one of the videos you posted on Facebook or on your YouTube channel, so my listeners get an idea of just a style of your comedy.
Yeah, I'm doing dry January, so I am. But it won't be difficult for me because I don't drink that much, to be honest with you. Well, I wouldn't drink now from Monday right through to Tuesday evening. I might have then a few drinks on a Wednesday. A friend of mine comes around and then has maybe a bottle of wine on a Thursday. I'd go out with the lads from work on a Friday for a few beers. On a Saturday, I might have a liquid lunch and maybe that night, you know, a couple of glasses of wine with me dinner. And then on Sunday, I just have a few, you know, little vodkas after me Sunday lunch, you know, that way. So, not that much really.
They really have gone viral, haven't they? Good morning to you both, those videos.
Oh, it's lovely to hear that beautiful Dundalk accent on the radio. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Sinead grew up in Dundalk, so she's always wanted to do that character.
Yeah,
so
I've always wanted.
God love it.
The nation needs a Dundalk accent on the radio, I think, yeah, definitely.
How long do you know each other and how did you decide to set up Dirt Birds?
Well, there's two stories. In Sue's head, I stalked her. This is Sue's story, that I stalked her until she would work with
yes.
me. But actually, in reality, Miriam, what happened was we were both doing a gig on the same night, and actually some woman reviewed the gig and she thought we were both very funny. So I thought, that's interesting. And I made one phone call. One, I want this on record, one phone call to Sue, not 800. I did not sleep outside her house. And she agreed then.
Yeah. I got a phone call one day from, I'd known Shay, we didn't really know each other, we'd met in the circuit and she rang up and said...
Because you were in the new list. So
So at that stage I wasn't, so we had taken our break and there was little children running around my feet and I got this phone call to say, do you want a comedy writing partner? And I went, yeah, sure. And we met in Cake Cafe in Camden Street and that was the end. That was 12 years ago.
Yeah, it just felt like we knew each other and we had a similar sense. Obviously, I was funnier, but I just thought, look, I'll give her a shot. You know what I mean?
And you also do a lot of your comedy, which I think is great, because I think between you, you've got about six children, just kind of women trying to portray a perfect life when we all know most... of our lives are just really struggling to get through it.
I think that's our comedy, you know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's kind of like the feedback we've gotten is I've just seen my life played out for 2 hours on a stage.
Yeah.
And with the book, it's kind of like an antidote to that kind of insta-perfect, you know, life we're supposed to be leading, you know what I mean? We're supposed to have like everything, the perfect house, marriage, kids, you know, with the BMI of Elle Macpherson, you know what I mean? So it's which is not possible.
And the arse of Jennifer Lopez.
Yes.
Which we both have, but you can't see it on radio.
You don't like boasting about it.
No, we don't like going on about that, no.
And I think you dedicated the book, that's right, to the women of Ireland who are hanging by a thread.
Hanging by a thread.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
I think it's just the day-to-day struggles. You know what I mean? It's just that kind of, the stuff that you need a lot of deep breathing for. Yeah. I think in the book there's chapters like mindfulness is definitely better than manslaughter.
Yeah.
It's just those moments in life where you're kind of getting through the day without killing someone. Yeah. You know, and that is really what life is all about.
So like when you're in a little car park waiting for that car parking space, you're sitting there with your hazard lights on and then some idiot just takes it on you. And I was saying to Sue, no amount of sending love and kindness to that person works at that point when all you want to do is for them to go into Lidl so you can keep the side of their car.
But I mean, we're not dissing mindfulness. We're all into it. We're personally really into that whole world. But but it is a parody on that whole world at the same time.
It's just all the struggles and stresses that women have. You know, so we've chapters like when kids wreck your head during the summer, you know, because there's, or how to learn how to love your muffin top. That's another one, because...
Embrace it,
because it's such a struggle for women, the whole weight thing. It's a constant conversation we all have, you know. Women struggle to lose, you spend months and months trying to lose weight. You lose about 5 pounds and then you go out for one night, have a McDonald's on the way home and put on 2 stone. It's cruel. It's absolute cruelty.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're just kind of laughing at that and going, look at, you know, don't worry about it. We're all in this together.
We're all in the same boat.
Or like even the diets, like the protein diet. That's, we were laughing at that. I blame diets all the time and go, that just doesn't work. You know, that protein diet does not work. It does, you know, if you don't have 18 sausages, 32 rashers and a leg of lamb for your breakfast.
Yeah,
you know
I think
I mean?
We get it wrong. I was doing the 5-2, which is the one where you starve yourself for 2 days and then you can eat what you want. But that isn't for the other 5 days. But that doesn't work if you're actually eating Chinese takeaway and Black Forest gatto continuously in a loop, you know what I mean,
for five days.
Yeah, no, that's
it's stuff
not,
like that, yeah. that we, I think, maybe Irish women get wrong.
Yes.
And when you were writing the book, how did you write? Did you sit down and write together? Or?
Well, Miriam, that's a brilliant question, because the laugh of that was written over the phone, that book.
Yes.
Literally, Sue was one side with four kids running around her. And of the river. Oh, this is where she gets in. She's a Southsider. You see that, Miriam?
Yeah,
you see the way she did that?
Yeah.
I am a Northsider.
I didn't do that.
Yeah, so we wrote it on the phone. We'd get up about 6 a.m. and there'd be dogs and children and rabbits and everything flown around the place and husbands walking in and out. And you know, it was a struggle, but at the same time, we'd such crack writing it, didn't we?
Tesco Mobile's great.
Yes, yes, yes.
And your first sketch, I think, was it posted in 2016. It went viral.
Yeah.
Dirtbirds has been growing since then. How does it work, though, when your main profile is social media?
Oh, it's fantastic. I didn't grow up with the social media kind of platform that we have now, but it was a brilliant thing for us, because it's kind of, it means that the audience decides whether it's funny or not, and you're not waiting around for any kind of producers or agents or anyone to sort of say, oh, you know, there's a show, or so it's literally, it goes out and you can tell with the views how it's
immediately,
doing immediately. So
and
it's
that,
a fantastic.
That first sketch was the beauty blogger from Dundalk, Dee from Dundalk, and Andrea from Aldi, who was the social
influencer. So there are beauty bloggers who get it wrong.
Yeah, and they get everything wrong. Like, they give ridiculous tips, like, you know, if you want to have permanent eyebrows, you know, don't go to a beautician, spend loads of money. Just use permanent marker, and that will do the same trick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, they consider themselves bloggers.
Boggers.
Yeah.
So we're sort of lampooning the whole kind of beauty tutorial online, Miriam, you know, but getting it completely
arse-whiz. And you're touring your show, Dirtbirds. It's like a self-help tour.
Yeah.
What inspired that? And what characters do you both do in the show? An example.
Well, we do Dean and Andrea live tutorials, and it's very exciting. I think the last show I was getting Botox on stage. Nearly getting Botox on stage. So we've Dee and Andrew, we've Carmel and Debs, of course, do you know what I mean? From the North Side, they're always in the shows.
Yeah, they're always in the
and
shows.
And they're really struggling with everything, kids, routine.
Parenting
in general. Oh,
making the school lunches.
Making the lunches, you know what I mean? We're like the healthy lunches, like the sandwich, the yogurt, the crisps, the Red Bull. You know, it's trying to...
And a home walk. Miriam, the homework kills me. I really struggled with my Calvin's homework this year.
Did you, Deb?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was very difficult, you know. And I'm worried because it gets, you know, it gets harder and harder every year.
Oh, so. Does it? And what class is he in now?
Senior infants.
Right.
So it's concerned, you know what I mean? But I'm Googling all his maths.
Are you?
Yeah. I'd love to homeschool, but I don't think I have the personality for it.
Do you not?
No. I think I'm a bit, what's that word?
Tick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be a bit tick, too tick for that. Yeah.
But look, listen, your self-help guide, which I have in front of me, Sue Collins and Sinead Colbert. It's published by Hachette. Oh, it's in all good bookshops. And as I can say, people want to watch you and it's viral. Dirt Birds on your YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And I think you can catch them live as well. All yes, your dates. Go on.
We're in Vicar Street actually in January on the 24th.
Yes, brilliant.
We're very excited. And we're all over the country. I mean, literally, we've got dates coming out our ears. So you can get all the dates on the website.
Which is dirtbirds.net. And they get all the dates for all your
everything's
gigs.
Everything's there.
Yes, fantastic.
Well, listen, Sue and Sinead, thank you both very much. And I wish you the best of luck with your self-help guide. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Miriam.
Thank you.
Well, best friends, movie stars and comedy legends Steve Martin and Martin Short will be coming to Dublin and Belfast next year with their tour titled The Funniest Show in Town at the Moment. It's been called Pure Entertainment and a children's show for adults, and they both join me now from their homes in the States on two different phone lines, and I know that the phone connections are pretty poor this morning. Thank you both for joining us today, Steve and Martin. Let's talk first about the show. I know you've been touring it already. You're coming here to Ireland in March, to Dublin and Belfast. Tell me about the show, Steve. What can people expect?
Well, we think that our goal when we do our show is to have the audience leave saying, that was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen, if not the funniest. But, you know, we're not that arrogant. But that's what we do. We keep it moving. We have a lot of laughs. We have music. We have incredible music. And, you know, it's just fun for us. And I think the fun translates to the audience.
And, Marty, how does it work, actually? Is it tightly scripted, or do you tend to bounce off each other because you know each other so long?
Well, it's certainly scripted in the sense that we know where we're going and want to, you know, you can't just improvise a show and assume that you're so damn brilliant it's going to be just perfect. So
we have
a great script we're from, and then we play with that, and sometimes words are added or jokes are added, and if they are, we put them in the next night if they work.
We do a lot of rewriting and writing.
Together or separately?
Mostly together, yeah. We get on the phone periodically and go over things, and also we do a lot of work after the show. We literally 30 seconds after we walk off stage, we're going, you know what we can do is tighten that little moment or et cetera, or add a new joke or something, or it needs a joke there.
So how did you decide to do this tour? Why did the idea of a tour come about?
Well, it started very kind of unintentionally, in the sense we were asked to interview each other on stage at the end of the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Chicago. And we did that, and it was a big success, and we loved doing it. And we thought, oh, we should do it again. And we did it again. And we just kept evolving it into, you know, an actual show because of how much fun we had with each other and the natural chemistry and the dinners afterwards and discussing it. It just became a really great thing to be part of, you know.
Martin, isn't it correct that your father came from a family of 11 in Cross Madeleine?
That's correct.
And when did he leave Cross
Madeleine? And one went to New York, one went to Canada, and one went
to... You keep these things from me.
Because I know you're not going to retain them.
Oh, that's true.
Steve would have to know what Cross Madeleine is.
I've known Marty for 35 years, and I think I've even Google mapped Cross Madeleine. And maybe I'll do it right now.
Tell me more about your father, Father Martin.
Well, then he went to Canada, and then he met my mother, and then he had five children with her, I being the youngest. But the others, one went to Birmingham, and that became, that was my Uncle Tom, and he became, Uncle Frank, and he's the father of Claire Short. One
the
went
MP.
To New York, and I have some Irish cousins in Brooklyn, and the rest stayed there.
And I have Irish blood.
Do you?
Yeah, it's sitting on my mantle in a jar. No, I'm kidding. I actually do. I have Scottish and Irish and English blood. It's a legend in our family, but it's also confirmed by DNA testing. But I don't know what the actual Irish family is. I don't know.
And of course,
I have a question for you, Marty.
Yeah.
Does your family own Shorts bicycles in Cross McGlen?
That's my cousin Niche.
Wow. Yeah. Finding more and more out about you, and I don't like it.
Street. I don't know why you wouldn't like it. You should be happy.
Okay, I'll be happy for you.
That's incredible.
We're very excited about coming.
Great.
I've been to Dublin, but I haven't been anywhere else. What are you talking about? Marty and I and our former wives took a whole trip across Ireland one summer. Went to the Ring of Kerry.
Beautiful.
Where else did we go, Marty? Limerick?
Yeah. We went from the east to the west.
Did you have fun?
And we never thought we'd be playing there as a duo.
Where did you meet each other, Steve, yourself and Martin? I think I could be wrong. Did you meet 35 years ago?
We did. We met basically doing Three Amigos.
With Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
And who are you?
Wherever there is injustice, you will find us. Wherever there is suffering, we'll be there. Line.
Wherever liberty is threatened, you'll...
Wherever liberty is threatened, you will find the Three Amigos.
We've done five movies together. And, you know, movies take a long time. And there's a lot of downtime, so we just kind of hung out, started talking and making each other laugh.
And was it love at first sight between the two of you?
Yes, I think so. It was,
yeah, kind of was.
Laughter at first sight.
We laugh, yeah, laugh at first sight. That's good.
And of course, people still love, I think, didn't you make two Father the Bride films together? You, Steve, of course, as the dad, and you, Martin, as Frank, the wedding planner.
Yes,
we made two Father the Brides. I'm with Diane Keaton, who is a very important part of our trio on that movie, because she was incredibly fun and she's such a great actress.
But Martin, were you deliberately trying to upstage everybody on that film?
I wasn't trying. That comes very naturally.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't have to work very hard at that.
Master and Mrs. Bonks and the Lovely Bride. Hello. Hello. Frank, a pleasure to meet you. Okay, please come with me and we'll talk all about our big day. The big day for the bride. Now, so you have not made up your list yet, but you know that you want wedding at home on January 6th, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Excuse me?
Yes, we would. We would like a wedding at home on January the 6th.
I love the weddings at the homes. They're very personable, very warm, because they're fabulous. Oh, so January 6th, give us 7 months. Uh-oh, hello, that's 5 months. 5 months, not much. But that don't bother me so much because it's a little bit tight, but we can do it and it will be spectacular.
Steve, when I said I was obviously interviewing both of you, I was filming this morning and somebody said, Steve Martin, you know, he's a comic genius. Where did you get your comic ability from? Like, tell me about your own family.
Well, let me just stop you right there. I mean, the word comic genius, I don't know. I mean, who's a comic genius? Charlie Chaplin. I try to figure out what a comic genius is, and it would say, well, that's a person who never fails. And, you know, comedy failure is built into it. So anyway, but I developed my love of comedy completely outside the home. It was from watching old movies, from listening to radio comedy when I was growing up, like Jack Benny, and, you know, watching Jerry Lewis and watching Laurel and Hardy and watching Abbott and Costello. And I just loved comedy. And I loved show business. And I sort of defaulted into comedy because I couldn't sing.
But you can play the banjo.
Well, I couldn't then, but I can now, yes. Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward, you know, Ireland has a great tradition of banjo music.
Absolutely.
But typically, the Irish banjo is a 4-string, and I play a 5-string. And those two worlds usually have never met. But just now, just in the last year or 2 years, there's a group called We Banjo 3, and they're making waves out here. They're Irish, and they're making waves out here in America. and they're playing the banjo in a style that is, I didn't even know it could be played like that. And so the four-string and the five-string banjo are meeting, finally.
And we'll meet on your show.
So much for Trump and Ukraine.
It's a history lesson.
And the four-string banjo, Steve, and the five-string banjo, is your plan to try and get them to meet up in your show in March?
Well, I'm playing the five-string. I don't play the four-string, but I play the five-string. So, I think all the music I play has Irish roots. Typically, early banjo music is from Appalachia.
Mm.
And a lot of the tunes migrated from the Ireland, England, and Scotland over to America. And that's how they were carried. And then they were, you know, that sort of mournful sound that I identify with, with part of Irish music is, for example, is Bobby Band Irish? They're Irish, right?
Yeah.
And all this kind of mournful quality is a very Irish thing that has translated to American folk and bluegrass music, at least the way I play it.
Absolutely. And of course, there's a great link between Irish and Scottish music right up to this day as well.
Yes.
Martin.
Yeah, so I don't.
Go on.
You know, I can't speak to that because I'm not an expert. If you tell me, I believe you.
And Martin, again, like Steve, I mean, you're both incredibly funny, but a lot of people are funny, but they don't make it ever as a career. What stage in your life, Martin, did you think, actually, I could probably make a career out of this?
I don't think you really think about it that way. I think you just go from interesting project or interesting job or choice to the next. And if you're kind of shine in comedy, then they tend to ask you to do that next. But I don't think I particularly had a game plan of I will be in comedy. I actually wanted to be a singer at one point, and it just, you know, just that's the way it worked. You're successful in a comedy and people want you to do another comedy.
Well, I wanted to be a magician, but I realized that the future for a magician is limited. And I realized that, the audience seems to like it when the tricks don't work. They kind of find that funny. So I just went in that direction.
But is comedy not incredibly difficult, Steve? I mean, put that to you first. I put it to both of you. I always think even stand-up in particular, is that not really difficult?
Well, I think every enterprise is difficult. Being a journalist is difficult. Being a comedian is difficult. Being a musician is difficult. They're all difficult if you want to do them well. So, but there is one quality to stand-up that is different from a lot of things in that you're utterly alone. And you have no, except when I work with Marty. Well, I feel like I'm alone, but Marty is standing on the stage next to me. I have to remind myself. But anyway, you have nowhere to go. You just got your lines. You have no instrument. You have no, other people to rely on. So stand-up is a challenge, I think.
And for you, Martin, do you find is it nicer and easier to do comedy when, for instance, you're in a film with someone like Steve or on stage with him as you'll be here in March? Is that easier than going out on your own to do stand-up?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I mean, because sometimes when things don't work and you're alone, you're just alone to mull that over. If you're with someone, you can laugh about how sad it was that it didn't work. You know, my history was always working with people, improvisational groups, Second City, and so I never really, you know, did a career that I was on the stage by myself until later in my career. It's much more fun to be with someone.
And I know, I think part of the comedy of this special that will be coming to Ireland, I think you poke fun at Hollywood in it. I mean, do you and Steve, what kind of a place is Hollywood to work in?
I have always had a great time. I found, once I was having a date years ago.
Mm-hmm.
With a very smart woman. And I was just having a dinner at the house that night with some actors. It was Michael York and some other people. I can't remember who was there. And after the dinner, she said, you know, these are some of the smartest people I've ever met. And, you know, mainly because Michael York knows Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But I found the people there to be very bright. And some of the cliches are true, obviously. And, but it's always been a good place for me. And, I'm pretty simple. And I think, I don't know if I'd call you simple, Marty, but by simple, I mean we're just honest. And we don't expect duplicity. So we don't put out duplicity.
So we, a lot of times, most of the time, we don't get it back.
Marty?
I mean, I think no matter where you live, you surround yourself with people that you like and share your values, and that so that the city, you know, whether it's Gomorrah or Hollywood, doesn't really matter as much as the people you picked, and you pick good people to surround yourself with, hopefully.
And you both, of course, spend time at Saturday Night Live early on your careers. I mean, the importance of satire and political comedy these days, it's probably as important as ever, would you say?
I'm surprised that comedy is still going strong, because I always think, well, they're just going to run out of jokes and pretty soon we're just going to be the same old stuff over and over. But it's not. You have all these new people, new daring people. There's no point for Marty and I to be daring. You know, we have been daring. Mm. But there's so many people who are, are iconoclasts, and it really works in comedy.
Do you still watch it, Saturday Night Live?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, we tape it. My wife and I, we watch it all the time.
Martin, just to say, when I spoke to you before in Dublin some years ago when you were over at Notre Dame, I asked you about your colonoscopy date nights with Steve Martin and Tom Hanks. Have they ended or do they still go on?
Well, now people tend to get in different schedules.
Yeah, and we're also in different parts of the United States now. So that's
We haven't done it for a few years.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea, though.
Yeah, it is.
And Steve, you said you consider, I think, Michael Caine to be a good friend. Do you have great memories still of making Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
No offense, Marty, but that's one of the most fun movies I ever worked on. We were in the south of France in the summertime with Glenn Headley and Michael Caine and Frank Oz, and we just laughed and laughed and laughed, and Frank Oz didn't like to shoot late, so it would be done by 7. It'd be daylight until 10. We'd go to an outdoor French restaurant and idly, talk about the script to make it a little better, hopefully. But I haven't seen Michael Caine actually since the movie. But I think we're affectionate toward each other.
Forgot I had a first-class ticket.
I love to love you in the night.
I couldn't help overhearing your conversation in the dining car. My condolences to your grandmother.
Huh? Oh! Right.
Didn't you say she was taken ill?
I tell them what they want to hear if it gets me what I want.
Rather a shabby trick, isn't it?
I can tell you've got a lot to learn about women.
Yes, I'm afraid I am a bit naive when it comes to the weaker sex.
Freddie Benson.
Lawrence Jameson.
Listen.
We're the weaker sex. Men don't live as long as women. We get more heart attacks, more strokes, more prostate trouble. I say it's time for a change. I say let them give us money. Let's live off them for a while. That probably shocks a guy like you, right?
Well, it's rather a revolutionary thought. Do you really think it's possible?
Look what I did in the dining car. She gave me 100 francs. That's like 20 bucks. Do you have any idea what it feels like to take a woman for 20 bucks?
No, I haven't. I'm afraid it's a little out of my class. What?
It's too bad. Could have had a blast on the Riviera.
Michael Caine once told me, I quickly learned who was making the money in Hollywood, that I'd go to actors' houses and they'd have pictures of themselves on the wall, and I'd go to producers' houses and then have Monets and Van Goghs.
He's so funny, actually, Michael Caine. Just to say, you're looking forward to coming here. Do you ever fight? Do you ever have disagreements?
No. Not really.
What do you mean, not really?
Well, look, you're coming here in March next year. Steve Martin and Martin Short, the funniest show in town at the moment. It's going to be in the Three Arena here in Dublin on the 11th of March and at the SSE Arena in Belfast on the 12th. I wish you both very well and thank you so much for chatting to us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that was great. And listen, Lisa Lam has rejoined us in the studio. You're here earlier on, of course, because we were talking about the show that's on next Sunday in the Gaiety, In My Life with Shay Healy, and you're singing at that. You're going to sing one of your own songs now, but first tell me about your new album.
Thanks, Miriam. Yeah, the new album is called Juniper and it's coming out after Christmas. It's an album I wrote in the west of Ireland, and the name of the album, Juniper, is about a tree that I fell in love with on the bog road from Clifton to Roundstone. So the nature of the landscape of the area really became part of the project itself. So I'm really looking forward to it all coming out.
You're multi-talented too, because we had Dermot Bulger in just a week ago, and of course you just finished in his new play Last Orders at the Dockside last night in the Abbey, didn't you?
We had an amazing send-off for the show, and it was wonderful to work with Dermot. He's an amazing man, a living, breathing historian, and Dublin Port were involved with the show, and it's always fantastic to be at the Abbey. So it's been a really busy but wonderful time.
And you've loads of dates coming up, but you've got one, I think, in the Solstice, 21st of December, with Damien Dempsey and Vicar Street. Tell me about that.
I'm really looking forward to that one. I'm going to sing some of the new music that night in Vicar Street. I'm delighted to be back in Vicar Street, and the wonderful John McLaughlin here is going to join me that night as well. So Damien and I are going to hopefully do a little bit of jamming together. It'll be great.
Brilliant. Look, Lisa Lam, get back up there now. You're going to get ready to sing Lighthouse, one of your own songs, accompanied again by John McLaughlin and Derek Cremin. My thanks today on sound to Jamie Doyle, our BCO, Denise Davies, and my producer, Shan O'Gorman. Thank you all very much for listening. Have a lovely Sunday and Bank Holiday Monday. And we'll go out listening to Lisa Lam singing Lighthouse.
I am the keeper, the lighthouse, an arrow, the impact, the light on the horizon, winding and blinding. I am the harbor in the night, light shining. I am the season. Sure. I am a woman at the station waiting for more. I am a lover in the darkness calling your name. I am a light in the sky, a quiet refrain. The house with the blue gate is waiting. Turning, and my heart, it is so bad and waiting for love to find a way, love to find a way, ooh, love to find a way, love to find a way. Give me a chance. for love to find.